Welcome back to Hoops HD, everybody. This is our weekly Hoops HD report. I am your host, Woo-hoo! Chad Sherwood, joined by David Griggs, Yobi Fortson, Rocco Miller from Bracketeer.org, John Tytel. John Slika should be along with us in a few minutes. He's running a little late tonight, but
John's having computer issues.
David appears to be here and wanting everyone to know that he's here.
David is here. Okay. I am here.
We've had a lot of action this past weekend, and we're actually recording this a little after 9 o'clock Monday night, coming just off of that Virginia-Duke game, and I'm sorry, the Virginia-North Carolina game. The one that somebody wants to talk about. But before we even get to any of that, we saw on Saturday the NCAA Selection Committee announce its top 16 seeds as of Saturday morning. So, and by the end of the day Saturday, several of those teams had already lost, so I would argue that it was pretty meaningless by the end of the day Saturday. However, David, I know you want to address this, so let me pull it up on the screen there. This is what the NCAA did announce.
Okay, well, first of all, we have a couple of things here, and we have a selection committee guessing expert, plus a couple selection committee guessing experts. I'm kind of curious to see what they thought. For starters, some of the things that you noticed, I believe 14 of these 16 teams were in the top 15 of the net. So now I realize that when you're talking about the top four lines and protected seeds, these teams are going to basically be ranked in the top 20 of anything. I think they're also in the top 20 of the polls and everything else. So maybe that isn't that indicative. But another thing I noticed, all of them have six quad one or quad two wins away from home. Are they valuing road wins, or is that just something that jumped out at me? And when you look at teams like Nevada and Houston getting protected seeds, something that we had not necessarily been giving them with our own committee, are they starting – does that mean that when they look at a Wofford, when they look at a Lipscomb, when they look at a Belmont, are they going to value teams with bloated records that have won away from home more so than they have in the past? And I'm just kind of curious to see what – our selection committee guessing experts have to say about those 3 points.
Right. Tytel, do you want to start with a response?
Sure. So I'll try not to focus all of my comments on the East region, even though that one is jumping off the page to me. Haha. I think that the committee did a very good job for early February. For the bracket I posted on Sunday, I actually had not only 15 of these 16 teams, but slotted in at the exact seed level they had. I had Villanova instead of Iowa State. They both lost over the weekend, so I think that gives a toss-up either way. But I think it's a great start. The thing is, I also ran the numbers from last February compared to last March, what they actually were. 8 of the committee's 16 bracket reveal February seeds were exactly on the money in March, which means 8 weren't. So it's a great exercise and a fun thing to talk about, but I don't think you should put a lot of stock in it because – only half of it might be correct in a month.
Well, I don't put stock into the teams that they picked. I'm trying to figure out and putting stock into what their thought process was.
Right. I think there's a couple of teams. Rocco, let me start with this. First of all, Nevada, currently in the top 8 nationally in the rankings, gets a 4 seed, and there was some surprise even on the show that maybe that they were too low. David almost saying they're too high. What do you think about where they rated like in Nevada and the other one loss team there, Houston?
Well, I think that day and this reveal was to me about Nevada and Houston. I thought we were all going to be fairly close on the one seeds and the overall 16 teams, but I thought Nevada and Houston had the biggest range of variance. And I thought what Nevada being slotted where they are at 14th overall, maybe even 13th after Iowa State's loss later that day, told me is that the overall body of road wins was important. Cause I believe they had 9 road wins before Saturday began. And what I found out from where they put Houston was that, you know, they're right between Kansas and Marquette and Iowa State. So the fact they're above Marquette and Iowa State, it's and they've only got a couple of wins that are both at home. I think it's LSU and now Cincinnati and a couple others, but not a lot away from home is, you know, that concoction of wins and only having the one overall loss does still matter. And that was the case for both teams.
And I got to tell you, David, the other team that I thought, to all of you, that really the other team I was very interested to see how they would slot was that Kansas team that we're watching play right now. In fact, as we record this, because if you look at their pure resume and you ignore injuries, ignore how they're playing lately, there's an argument they could be two lines higher, because I mean, they, under the old RPI formula, they'd be the number one team in the nation still right now, and their body of great wins are so good. But on the other hand, you look at the way Kansas has been playing recently and really since the Azubuike injury, and there's an argument they should be at the five or the six line. And I think what you ended up with is a committee of 10 people that probably had several of them thinking they were a one seed and several of them thinking they're about a six seed. And where do you end up? You end up at a three. Isn't that the way it works?
Overall, yeah, 10 overall. And you're right, Chad. And that's the thing about how committees work. And I think that sometimes we think of it as one singular organism where everything is kind of a consensus. It is not. And what gets one team seated either high or low could not come into play at all for another team. It's just, it's 10 different people with 20 different ways of measuring it. And if you don't believe that, well, you all understand that because we go through this exercise every year, and we might look at a team's overall wins and they end up somewhere just because of how the voting works out, and where somebody else, it might be something else that is the deciding factor in where they go. So it's more subjective than objective. To you guys that guess the committee, I don't know how the hell you do it, because you're not really ranking teams so much as you're guessing what other people are going to do. But yeah, what do you do with that? Because I could look at Kansas and say, well, they're 1-6 in true road games. They lost at West Virginia. Why should they be a protected seed at all? And I don't have them as a protected seed in my own personal bracket.
And David, there's no perfect answer to your question. I think the best thing that I've found to do over the time that I've been doing it is you put a list of pros, you put a list of cons together, you try to figure out what they're talking about and what outweighs what, and then you compare teams, and then you just slot them, and you just put your best foot forward. But there's no perfect answer to that question.
Yeah. I'll tell you what, why don't we move away from the top of a bracket and move down to discuss a couple of bubble teams. And we did this last week. I want to start the show off with it again this week. It's a little bit of blind resume test here.
Can I ask one more question here?
Sure, before I do that, go ahead.
They do this exercise twice.
Right.
They only release the top 16 of the first time they do it. Should they release the entire field twice, or at the very least release the top 16 for a second time?
I'm fine with it as it is. And Rocco, yeah.
I agree. Well,
football does it every week, so just saying.
From a bracketologist perspective, I love the mystery. So the less I know, the better, because then there's more guessing involved. The more they tell us, the less guessing, and, you know, kind of takes away from anything we're trying to accomplish.
Yeah.
And I think it creates more yelling and screaming like it does in football. How could it possibly change the last week? But it was a new vote.
Well, that's what they're trying to avoid. That's why they don't.
Let's move over to a little bit of blind resume here. And Joby, let me bring you in on this. I've got two resumes up here on the screen, neither of which I'm going to say is a great resume by any means. I just want to ask you, you know, which one do you like better? And maybe are these two fairly close resumes here?
Well, they are two different resumes. One is doesn't have a lot of good, but almost no bad on the left. The one on the right is the exact opposite. It has some bad, four tier two and two tier three losses. But those 1-2-3 road wins, I am always a believer that more good beats out less bad. If that makes sense. So I like the resume on the right.
Yeah, I don't know who the one on the right is, but I know who the one on the left is, and I guarantee you I like the one on the right better. No matter who it is.
For those of you who have watched the show,
I don't know who it is, so I'm curious.
There's a dead giveaway on the left.
I see the non-conference 352. Yeah. I know exactly who the one on the left is.
So I like the one on the right because I know who the one on the left is.
The end of the year, so.
Titan, what do you think? You with them? You think the one on the right is better?
So based on the fact that the one on the left involved somebody scoring 24 points, yes, I will go with the one on the left.
Oh, yeah, I forgot about that. There it is. There's the 24.
Okay, well, I'm going to turn this off here. And if it's like last week, we're going to have a little bit of a crash here. If not, maybe this will actually work here. But let's see if this will work here. Give us a couple seconds, hopefully. And the one on the left is NC State. How about the Georgetown Hoyas that you all just picked over an NC State team that you are all putting in the field? So reactions to that?
Yeah, well, I should have been picking Georgetown, I guess.
Rocco, what do you think of that? I know you haven't had Georgetown in your field at all, but no. How about that?
Well, I took a hard look at Georgetown last night, and I do think they're getting a lot closer to the field. I think I have them the fifth team out. I think the biggest difference right now, of course, is the net rating, but then the second biggest difference is the amount of losses that Georgetown piled up in the second and third quadrants completely outweighs what NC State's lost despite the NCSOS factor. So I do think body of work versus body of work, I would still go NC State, but the blind resume exercise here is pretty valuable.
Yeah. And Chad, this is where I think when you dig inside who the teams are in the quadrants, don't tell me winning at Illinois is impressive.
Don't tell me
beating Liberty at home is impressive. Don't tell me, you got to paint. Meanwhile, a Clemson team that I think is in the field in a net of 37, just on the edge of a tier one, I mean, you can move the teams around to make it, when you actually drill down. But I will say this, I am impressed with Georgetown's resume more having that blind resume test. The J&G has them fifth team out right now. So it's not wacky, but I would not have inherently thought much of Georgetown until you did that. That at St. John's, at Butler, at Providence, that's nice. That's really nice.
Well, we'll get back to Georgetown a little bit here, but let's Joe, let me just stick with you. Tytel, you've been going to Georgetown games all season.
No, let's end it already.
And Tytel, unfortunately, has seen the home games. None of those great road wins. He hasn't seen a single tier one win.
Let's start with the NC State's conference, though. And Joby, let me start with you. Virginia had a hell of a last 3 days. First of all, with the loss to Duke, and then the win tonight at Carolina. And I know you wanted to discuss.
No, very much. So let's go with the game of the century part two. Let's talk about that, Duke, Virginia. What a game. And I will say this. If Virginia actually played, and it sounds crazy, in a game where Bennett gave up more points than he ever has at home in his history at Virginia, but I actually think Bennett's game plan defensively was good. It was because Zion Williamson didn't really hurt Virginia much at all,
except that block.
But offensively, they really kept him in. They really kept him in check, which was the difference in the first game. But who would have thought R.J. Barrett, who's hitting 30% from three, would just not miss? If Duke is in a position where they are hitting threes at that level, and yes, they had room to hit them, but it's not like they were just open shots. Yeah, there was still a hand in the face. And they're nailing those threes. And then, Cam Reddish having it bounce off the backboard once, and then the other time it hits the back of the rim and in. Yeah, we can make all the excuses, but the fact is, give R.J. Barrett a lot of credit. He won that game for Duke with his outside shooting. Basically knocked Virginia down. Virginia fought back, but let's face it, that deficit that Duke did to get up 22-11 or 22-9 at one point, that is what set the tone for the rest of the game. And Duke is unbeatable if they nail their outside shots. I just don't think they'll nail their outside shots that well the rest of the year.
Well, yeah, Tytel, I want to bring you back into this, but the stat I heard was Duke, I think, was 13 of 21, which is over 60% from three in this game. They're shooting 33% of the season. They hit about six or seven extra threes, and if they miss those shots like they've been doing all season, they lose the game. So is Duke – was it a crazy game where they were just perfect?
It was fluky in that I don't think they're going to – if they played Virginia nine more times, I don't think they're going to shoot 60% from the three-point line in any, much less half of those games. I do want to say a couple things to Joby. Number one, I think we need to give Zion a little more credit. I agree RJ was unconscious from behind the arc, but three steals and three blocks. He isn't just a big guy who dunks and rebounds. He's starting to develop this all-around game, and I think that, like, I don't know what the pro ceiling is, but I'm starting to get more excited by it. This is a Duke team. They've lost two games all year, once in Maui to the Zags by 2 points, and once at home, albeit to Syracuse in overtime by four while missing two starters. They're this close to being undefeated. They've now won six straight ACC games. We talked about how this is an amazing conference. 6 straight ACC games by double digits. But tomorrow they start a stretch of 5 straight against teams who should or could be in the tourney. At Louisville, host NC State, host the Heels, at Syracuse, at Vod Tech. I don't think they're going 5-0. They're certainly not going 0-5. I don't know which Carolina team we're going to see. Louisville on the road is tough. Like, there's chances for them to lock up a 1 seed if they can knock out 4 of these 5 games.
And I agree with that. As you see their profile there, they have that home win over Auburn.
And, there it is. There it is.
Not much else. But, like, when you look at what they've done here in the quadrant, they have the 2 wins over Virginia. Virginia's only 2 losses, by the way. They've lost to no one other than Duke. They have the win over Kentucky, edged them out first game of the year on a neutral floor.
Edged them.
Yeah. And, like, so that is 3 wins against top 5 teams, 2 of which were away from home, not to mention Texas Tech away from home in the rankings, Florida State in a true road game that's in the rankings, and you look at the opportunities they have against Louisville, North Carolina, Vatek also in the rankings, and whoever they may face in the conference tournament, you're talking about a team that's good enough to win 8 or 9 games away from home against ranked teams, and that is sensationally, insanely good. That might be the best profile I have ever seen.
It's an incredible profile. Like, I agree with you there. But you know, this Rocco, the other team that really impressed me this week, what a team I put up on the right there, now 5 straight wins for this Florida State team, including the win over Louisville this week. And what about this team?
That was a very impressive comeback. Louisville had a stranglehold on that game. I don't know what the biggest lead was, but I think it was in the neighborhood of 15 or more. And even into the second half, I was shocked that Florida State rallied and got that into overtime. And once it got into overtime, they took care of them. It was a very impressive comeback. I think we would all agree going into the year and throughout the season here, Florida State is a dangerous team with a lot of talent, and they've got the experience of last year's Elite Eight run, and they're putting together a resume. If they end up seeded in the protected area or all the way down to 8 or 9 again, I don't think it really will mean a lot, because they're capable of, when they do show up and they play well together, they're capable of a Final Four run, and they're that talented.
Yeah, and really, I mean, look at the rest of their schedule. The game at Carolina, sure, you could put an L on that, but every other game they've got left is really winnable here.
It is.
Or a home, winnable or a home game.
Yeah, Wake Forest at home is winnable.
Oh, I mean, Vod Tech is, you know, the one I was kind of thinking about there. But,
yeah, but they're shorthanded. Yeah.
I think we have Stalika with us now. And Stalika, I want to bring up one other ACC team for you here, a team that David put in his bracket day, and I agreed with him. But 4 wins in a row now for the Clemson Tigers after they had that heartbreaker against NC State. They've gotten red hot.
We've been asking for teams outside of the bubble to at least make their case, and Clemson did make a bit of a case with a win against a shorthanded Virginia Tech team, but still a win nonetheless. They have now won 4 straight, including a game against Georgia Tech and also against Pittsburgh in recent memory. So they'll definitely have some opportunities. Miami is still a little bit dangerous, as we saw against North Carolina over the weekend, but Louisville is going to be one of their most challenging games coming up later on this week.
Right. That's one of the games I'm definitely circling for this week. In fact, I'll pull up the upcoming schedule here in the ACC, coming up on the right-hand side there. Huge game coming up Tuesday night, Duke at Louisville. And then, as you mentioned, Louisville follows it up with a home game against Clemson. A few other games on there to note, including NC State at Duke. NC State team, as we started at host of Syracuse, they desperately need wins, though, this NC State team.
Syracuse could use a couple wins themselves. They have good wins, but they have offset that with bad losses. And then a week from tonight, that Virginia at Virginia Tech game, another chance for Virginia to their road warriors. I mean, Virginia is probably the second most impressive resume, at least when you look at the games that they've won away from home, particularly the game they won the night. Virginia Tech, a ranked team, and they might go in there and crush them like they did the last time.
Let's jump over to a few other conferences here. We got a lot to get through tonight, and I want to jump over to the Big Ten. And Rocco, let me start off with you. And what happened Sunday night last night? What happened in the state of Iowa when Northwestern was just cruising to a huge road upset win over Iowa? 2 minutes left. It's a 14-point game, and it was over. Correct? Jordan Bohannon didn't bother showing up for that game, did he?
Oh my gosh, that was an incredible rally at the end, and it finally looked like Northwestern put a full game together. They came out with a great game plan. I think Iowa shot less than 25% in the first half, but they used that press very effectively with at around the 8 minute mark, and really turned the tides quickly. Maybe it was even actually it was a lot further in, about 4 minutes to go. I think it was. 16 or 15 point deficit at that point. Yep. And then they got it down to 12. And anyway, so, and Bohannon shot at the end. I mean, that was one of the best moments we'll probably see all year in the conference.
It was a bad possession. That's what's funny.
Yeah, it was not the shot they needed. They should have forced it inside and tried to make overtime. Absolutely.
Yep, you're absolutely right. And so just another missed opportunity for Northwestern. That would have totally changed their trajectory for the year. But unfortunately, bad break there.
Yeah, and I looked at the Big Ten standings this morning and saw that Rutgers was tied with Indiana and ahead of Nebraska and behind Illinois, and I have no idea what the hell world I'm living in.
Well, Nebraska is just – I mean, if you pull up their profile, it's actually quite good.
No, David, we're not pulling up Nebraska's profile. But let's talk about the team that beat Nebraska this week at Titel. How about Purdue now, in the loss column at least, tied for first with Michigan?
Amazing. This team was 6-5 after an 8-point loss to the Irish back in mid-December at everybody's favorite, the Crossroads Classic. Since then, 11 out of 12 wins, right there with Michigan. Carson Edwards, unstoppable as ever. He had 27 in the win over the Huskers on Saturday. He and Ethan Happ, I think, are 1-1A for the Big Ten Player of the Year, if not All-American as well. Very flexible starting lineup. Ryan Klein, Nodell Eastern, Grady Eifert, three starters, each go 6-6. They can switch them all over the court. Let Edwards do his thing, and if they have to do a pick and roll, they can roll with anybody.
One other team I want to discuss here, Joby, let me bring you in on this Michigan team. This is the team that I keep wanting to make a case should be a one seed right now.
Yeah,
I don't know if it's above your Virginia team after the win, but maybe it's above Gonzaga.
No, I don't think they're above. The maybe question above would be, yeah, I agree that Michigan is very much in the running for a one seed. You know, the committee, though, had Kentucky ahead of them, had Gonzaga ahead of them, et cetera. We'll see. Michigan has more opportunities than possibly those, though. Kentucky is a great game, as we'll talk about, coming up against the Volunteers this weekend. Michigan, I think, has played very solid. Their mistakes are on the road against good teams. They did lose, unfortunately for them, big in each case. But they're good, solid teams they lost to. And I love what they did early on in the season. They plowed through. They embarrassed Villanova. They embarrassed North Carolina. They whipped the Purdue team that we were just praising. I think Michigan is certainly going to be a Final Four contender. Will they make it to that one? They have opportunities because the Big Ten is so deep. But they can't do any more slip-ups like they did at Iowa and at Wisconsin. And I don't know if they're capable of making that run where they only get like one more loss the rest of the year, because that's what it's going to take, probably, with the Zags seemingly not going to lose again. Kentucky or Tennessee, you know, they'd need Virginia or Duke to fall off, and I don't see that happening right now after Virginia's win in Chapel Hill.
Yeah, I wanted to make a comment, Chad. I do think Michigan has a path to a one seed. I think there's seven teams that do, the four that are already up there, plus Michigan, Michigan State, and Kentucky. When you look at what is already there, true road win against a protected seed, check. They have it at Villanova. I think they're going to get up there. When you look at their losses, those, as long as they don't do any worse than that, that's still pretty consistent with what you might see out of a one seed. And the opportunities, two against Michigan State, if they go on the road and win both of those games and then pick up another win against Purdue away from home or somebody like that in the conference
Maryland
away from home in the conference tournament, and maybe even face Michigan State again, the opportunities are there for them to end up on the one line. I think. The only problem is, unlike North Carolina, Kentucky, well, those two in particular, they don't have multiple games against teams that are already up there, and it's going to be harder for them to overtake somebody that they don't play.
Well, Kentucky has games against Tennessee left.
Yeah, two. Well, yeah, that's what I meant. Michigan okay. doesn't play anybody on the one line.
Well, Kentucky Michigan does. Plays Michigan State twice, though. So
yeah, they do.
Two line. Yeah.
Yeah.
But Stalik, let me in here on the upcoming schedule in the Big Ten, and it should be flashed up on the screen right now. There are a few key games, including tomorrow night, Michigan State at Wisconsin.
Well, Michigan State certainly got back on track after a brief two-game losing streak with a demolition job against Minnesota at home, so we'll have to keep an eye on them. And I mentioned them last week. Illinois quietly starting to climb up towards respectability, but Ohio State and Wisconsin, that's going to be a huge step up for a young team. And we've forgotten about Brad Underwood, it seems, over the past couple of years as he's had to do a bit of a rebuilding
job. They are still 9-15 of the season, are they not?
Yeah.
Okay.
I think they're still building more towards a bid for next season, but they're still going to be a noisemaker for the remainder of the year in this conference.
A real shot to avoid that first round of the Big Ten tournament. So that's the one thing I will give
you
a line.
And we have a huge game on Saturday, this Northwestern-Nebraska game. If Nebraska wins that one in regulation, I think you got to move them up ahead of Iowa, because Iowa needed overtime to get by Northwestern.
My damn buzzer's not working again. Let's go over to the Big East. Tytel, the game of the season so far in the Big East was Saturday, Marquette, Villanova. Villanova suffers the 1-point loss. Maybe a little controversy. I don't think so. I thought the calls were right. But how about this Nova team and Marquette?
How about it? Right down the wire, Marcus Howard showing that he's still the Big East player of the year. I want to talk about Villanova, though. Marquette, one game behind them, going for the number one seed in the conference tourney. I think they're both going to go undefeated for the next 2 weeks before we get the rematch at Finneran Pavilion on the 27th. In terms of Villanova's youth, you see, like last year, they used freshmen like Dante DiVincenzo to win a national championship. This year, that is not going to be the formula. They're getting a lot of good playing time out of Sadiq Bey as a freshman. He had a career-high 37 minutes against Creighton and then 38 in the game against Marquette. But the rest of the class is giving him nothing. Colt Swider, he's got a good excuse. He's been out for a few weeks with a broken bone in his right hand. Javon Quinterly, no excuse whatsoever. 12 combined points in the past 7 games. He's lucky he has some veterans left after losing 4 guys to the draft, because he's getting nothing out of the freshman besides Sadiq Bey.
I've been really impressed with Villanova. I mean, if you pull up their profile – it's really good, but you start to think that on the court, they might actually be better than what their profile indicates, because when you look at the games that they've lost, it takes a second to populate. Okay, Michigan clobbered them at Kansas, and that was a full-strength Kansas team. That was when they were number one before Azubuike got hurt, right in that game till the end. At Marquette, that is not an easy place to win, had a chance to win at the buzzer. So 2 of their losses are to top 10 teams in true road games by a total of 4 points. And then they've got 2 others.
Tytel's happy that the team with a losing record in the Ivy League beat them.
Rocco. About 3 or 4 weeks ago, we joked about how funny it was to look at the Big East standings and only see 2 teams with a winning record. And yet, for about the 4th or 5th week in a row that we were doing this show, we have it again. I mean, it's just amazing what's going on in this conference.
It's really funny you said that. I was gonna say another week with 8 teams under 500. It's incredible. But in all seriousness, you know, in doing the bracket exercise over the last day or so, this conference actually probably owns the most weight when it comes to who these last bids will ultimately go to, because there are teams like St. John's and Seton Hall on the inside, and then there are teams like Butler right on the line and Georgetown and Providence with maybe a win or two away from changing their projection, and same with Creighton. And then DePaul, really not that far off themselves. So when you take all that into consideration and you have all these teams going through Armageddon against each other over the next 4 weeks, it's going to be fascinating, and I think there's going to be a bit or two stolen by one of them.
Yeah, I mean, St. John's and Seton Hall trending up a little bit. St. John's with a huge win at Marquette, but then they
two wins against Marquette,
but then St. John's loses to Providence over the weekend.
Exactly. Yeah, you don't know what you're going to get, but the nice thing for St. John's case is those two wins over Marquette is a lot better than most of the bubble can bring to the table.
Exactly. Yeah.
A question about the last place team here. Stalika, is Xavier going to win another game this year? Because that was their most winnable remaining game, and they lost pretty by 12.
This is February. Normally playing Creighton should be a bit of a lock, but honestly, I don't see any game where Xavier is going to be favored this year. I mean, historically, I can't recall the last time, if ever, a team has gone from a one seed to the bottom of its conference. The first team that comes to mind would be Duke in 1994-95, but yeah, I don't think they were a one seed that year.
Upcoming schedules on the screen there. Big week for the Johnnies, actually, hosting Butler in a huge bubble game Tuesday night, and then they've got Villanova coming up on Sunday. Apparently, they're playing Villanova twice on Sunday, too, if you read that schedule. That's a very interesting doubleheader action or something. Let's keep rolling along. Go over to the Big 12 now, and
all right.
There they are. Okay. Stalika, let me start off with you on this in the Big 12 here and what happened over the past week, where I don't know that we saw anything that really shocked me other than the fact that Texas actually found a way to win two games in the same week.
Well, I think the other thing that would have grabbed your attention over the weekend was TCU actually getting out to a big lead at Iowa State, where Hilton Magic did not kick in for the Cyclones this time around and actually changed the Horned Frogs profile for the better. And as we speak right now, they actually have a one-point lead at home against Kansas. So that would be another opportunity for them to add to their profile. But at the same time, the other team that did impress is another team from Kansas, and that's Bruce Weber's K-State team that actually got a big win at Baylor on the road during the weekend and now have a two-game lead atop the standings.
Yeah, if there's such a thing as a magic bullet win, it was that win at Iowa State for TCU. Wow. I mean, because they had only one true road win and no good wins, and now they've gotten a good win on the road.
Yeah, it was the huge hole in their profile was that lack of anything at all in quadrant one. Now, not only it's a very good road quadrant one win. Rocco, you had a comment on them?
Yeah, I was actually just going to mention just a quick Atlantic Sun nugget. That actually really helped Lipscomb.
Yeah, it did. No, it did.
It's absolutely a game changer. So just want to mention that briefly. But I also want to call out Kansas State. They've got a two-game lead in the loss column now. So, you know, it's just like every other year in the Big 12. A team from Kansas is dominating.
Tytel, I think you have some comments on K-State also.
So it's amazing because Kansas has owned this conference, and the Wildcats started 0-2 in conference play with losses to your favorite team, Texas, as well as Texas Tech. With 8 games left in the regular season, they're 2 up on everybody in the loss column. To give you an idea of how long it's been since somebody outside Lawrence has won this conference regular season title outright, it was Oklahoma State in 2004. To give you an idea of how long ago that was, the best player on that team was Cody Allen. He has already started and finished a 14-year NBA career since then. Having said, a very tough weekend for the Wildcats at Texas and hosting the Cyclones. So we're going to see exactly what they're made of.
Let's talk about how old the current Kansas players were the last time their team lost, did not win the Big 12 championship. I mean, they were kids. But
young kids.
Very young.
They were pre-K.
Pre-K. I mean,
another point, because, I mean, you've heard talk about, even with us, that the Big 12 was a little bit down this year, not as good as we're seeing. In my bracket today, there were 7 out of the 10 teams inside the bubble. Yeah. So
7, and there's a good argument for 8 there also. So, yeah. But Joby, here's the upcoming schedule with K-State with an interesting week at Texas, then hosting Iowa State. So huge week, actually.
Yeah, this is the week that maybe Kansas State, can they, because they have the West Virginia trip too, which they should be able to handle. But Given that West Virginia has what, two people left on their team after today. but it is on the road in Morgantown. You never know. But they yeah, heck, Kansas almost lost there. Wait a minute, they did. K-State, this is the week. And if they can beat Texas, if they go 3-0, that the Kansas's, you know, reign of terror over the Big 12, I think, is done. I don't think they're going to go 3-0 because, you know, Texas shows talent, and Iowa State might just be a better team than Kansas State, I would argue. But the opportunity's there. And if they do it, all of a sudden, if the committee were to put out a, you know, Sweet 16 a week and, a, you know, 2 weeks from now, Kansas State would be listed in that top 16 pretty easily.
Yeah, I think there definitely was an argument they should have been in that top 16 this time. David, one of the rare times I agree with you, David, but let's move over to the SEC where Rocco, this Kentucky team, even though they're not in first place as of right now, they might be as of next week, just continues to roll.
Yeah, they've really clicked, and it took a while because they're mixing in mostly young guys, as always, that a couple sophomore holdovers, and then, of course, Reed Travis coming from Stanford, and, of course, starting with that shocking blowout loss to start the year. But it's taken some time to mold. They've had the benefit of playing a lot of the weaker SEC teams, I want to say, but now they've gotten into the meatier part of the schedule, going to the hump over the weekend and getting a big win on the road against in a hostile environment is really adding some character. And this just plays to Calipari's MO. We all have our own opinions about him, but I think his teams characteristically continue to get better over the season, and they're always okay with a couple learning losses in the mid to late part of the season if it requires it, and they're doing the same thing now.
Yeah, and David, in terms of the battle for the SEC championship, it's going to come down to these two games starting this weekend, Kentucky and Tennessee, will not.
Yeah, I'm really, really looking forward to that game. Kentucky, it just seems to be getting better and better and better. I mean, it's not easy to win at Mississippi State. It's not easy to win at Florida. They much less win both places. And then, like, they've got the two huge – I mean, they're just really rolling, but so is Tennessee. I mean, that is – circle that one. That is a high caliber matchup, and it's going to be fun to watch.
Tytel, before Kentucky gets a Tennessee game, they got to pass a home test against LSU, don't they?
Oh, did you forget about the Bengal Tigers, everybody? This team is unbelievable, and they're young. They did have the home loss to Arkansas a week ago. They bounced back two big wins at Mississippi State and home to Auburn, 9-1 in league play, tied with Kentucky, one game back of the number one team in the nation. The good news, they only have to face the Wildcats and the Vols once each. The bad news, they have to face them this month when they're both playing their best basketball of the year. However, the Tigers' 8-man rotation, they have one senior. If the other 7 guys all return next year, who knows, we'll find out. They're not just going to be a good team, they're going to be a top 10 team in the nation in 2020. Unlike home court heroes that we all hate, this team is 5-0 in SEC road games. They've only had one road loss all year by 6 points. Some little unknown team called Houston.
Yeah, Will Wade done with the job that Rick Barnes has done, Will Wade is probably a little bit overlooked. He has done a phenomenal job at LSU, and this was not a basketball juggernaut when he got there. They weren't exactly set up to be as successful as they've been. He's done a fantastic job.
The upcoming schedule for the SEC should be flashing up on the screen right about now. We already mentioned LSU and the Kentucky-Tennessee games. A few others worth circling. Ole Miss at Auburn, for example, on Wednesday night.
Bubblicious game there.
Very bubblicious game there. Florida-Alabama on Saturday, another bubblicious game. Maybe even that Mississippi State-Arkansas game as well.
Yeah, Chad called me out today for ranking Auburn too high. Boy, has the thing.
Before we move on for this conference, Tytel, a little news out of Georgia down at the bottom of the standings.
So I feel bad that we don't have Matt here because he is our resident expert when it comes to the recruiting stuff. But just want to give a shout out to Tom Crean at Georgia. It's Anthony Edwards to stay in state, the number one shooting guard in the nation, picking the dogs over both Kentucky and Florida, who always get multiple McDonald's All-Americans, it seems. Huge get. I don't think he's good enough to turn this team around into like a 25-win team, but an amazing recruiting effort by Coach Green.
Yeah, he's pretty good. He might start his freshman year.
Well, before we go on to the next conference, Rocco and Titel, I'm going to address this to both of you. When we had this podcast last week, if I had told you that a team from Washington would take the Arizona road trip or the Pac-12 and win both games by double digits, you probably wouldn't have been totally shocked. I told you that it was the other team from Washington that was going to do it. What the hell happened with Washington State this week?
Well, it hadn't happened, Chad, in 21 years when you factor in the fact that they won both games by double digits. Nobody's done that since 1998. And the other
nobody or Wazoo?
Nobody.
Nobody has ever pulled off the desert sweep by double digits since 98. And then the second piece to that is, this is a little bit of deja vu if we all remember the Wooden Classic last year when Washington State came out of nowhere and took out San Diego State and St. Mary's to win the tournament and start 6-0 and got into the rankings and then went back to being Wazoo. So hopefully for Husky fans' sake, they go back to being Wazoo this week as they face each other Saturday.
Titel, where did this come from? I'm so lost as what I saw happen the last week. I mean, if it was the other way around, I would have gotten it.
It's impossible. It's Ernie Kent making a late bid for Conference Coach of the Year, but more importantly, Robert Franks making a strong case for Player of the Year in the Pac-12. He missed four games right after Christmas with a hip contusion injury. Ridiculous stats this week. Combined in the wins, 21-point win over ASU, 14 against my Wildcats. His combined numbers in those two games, 65 points, 12 of 18 from behind the arc. But he doesn't just sit outside, 21 rebounds, and it's not just offense, 5 blocks and 4 steals. He's an all-around player. If he can play like that for another month, he could be the Conference Player of the Year.
Wow.
Chad, you know who is not happy with Washington State? Mr. Scott, because they might have cost the conference a little money this weekend.
Well, Joby, let me ask you, is there a second bid here beyond Washington? And I'm talking about this Arizona
State. I actually think Arizona State, so, just because
nice bounce back,
so weak,
Washington win, but yeah.
Arizona State is that, you know, it's the good outweighs the bad, but there is some bad here in the wake of the Washington State loss. But not many teams in the bubble have wins over Kansas, albeit home, Mississippi State on a neutral court. You know, they did get the win at Washington. That's why we're not talking about a double Washington sweep, a hot Washington team. They've shown signs of life. They are the team, if there is a second bid, that I think could do it. But, man, they got to stop messing around with Utah and Washington State and Stanford and USC. They can't do that. Just has to end. Schizophrenic, you know, schizoaccused has moved west to Arizona State, and that has to end because they're good. Unfortunately for them, there's not enough good in this conference to outweigh more bad coming on.
And real quick, the upcoming schedule in the Pac-12. David,
one more comment. If you have not seen, you got to find this on Twitter or YouTube, Tad Boyle shaking hands with Andy Infield after the Colorado USC game. It was phenomenal.
It was almost got ugly there. This Arizona State has the mountain trip to Colorado and Utah. I don't have confidence they can sweep that trip, but they've got to sweep it. And I just don't think they can. And Washington, Rocco already mentioned just the one game at Washington State.
I think one of the more bizarre things that we saw during the weekend was both mountain schools sweeping the trip in Los Angeles, Utah doing it at the buzzer after falling way behind in Poly Pavilion.
Let's stick out west real quick here. First of all, in the West Coast Conference, Gonzaga continued to roll, although they got some news today, Rocco, that Killian Tilly is done, at least for the regular season. Possibly that he can be back in the postseason, but he hasn't really been a factor in the team this year, has he?
Yeah, well, I think it could be argued that they're almost better without Tilly because they beat Duke without him. They had a very impressive non-conference schedule without him. They've been playing recently without him. Look at what they did to St. Mary's over the weekend.
And San Francisco on Thursday night.
I mean, so there's a stat that I saw this morning is really incredible, is in WCC play, Gonzaga is averaging a positive rating per possession of 0.5, which if you it's incredible. Yeah, it's a positive 0.50. You look at almost any other conference, it's within 0.1 or 0.15, and they are off the charts. So they're
that is UNLV yeah. Big West back in the Tarkanian days. I didn't realize it was that big. Wow.
Yep. So they're obviously playing at a high level, and the better Duke does, and I actually think the two wins Duke now has over Virginia only makes Gonzaga look better because they beat him without Tilly.
Yeah, you hate it for Tilly, though. I mean,
yeah, I agree.
To not be able to be a part of this, at least, I mean, he's still a part of it, but for him to not be able to play, you just kind of hate that for him. Because this is a special team.
And Titel, beyond the Zags, I think you wanted to bring up a little BYU talk here.
I mean, we can talk about the Zags. We should, but I'm going to do a little BYU just because even though they lost by 30 to the Zags to finish January, right. They have won three straight. They're 8-3 in league play. They might lock up the number two seed in the conference tourney by next week if they can beat San Francisco on the 21st. They've had some injuries to their junior class. They've inserted a couple of freshmen in Connor Harding and Gavin Baxter into the starting lineup, which seems to have helped. Interesting scenario for Coach Dave Rhodes. He has 13 straight seasons of 20-plus wins. If he loses to the Dons and the Zags, he's going to finish the regular season 19-12. He still might get a double bye as the number two seed, and then have to face the Dons again in the semifinals on March 11th, 1 month from tonight. He's already beaten them twice, and he's going to beat them to get his 20th win of the season. A little pressure there.
Yeah. Sleeka, upcoming schedule in the West Coast. The Zags this week at Loyola Marymount, at San Diego. Anything to worry about?
Early on in the season, we would have said keep an eye on Loyola Marymount, but they've seemed to regress back to the mean during conference play right here. So I wouldn't be looking for Gonzaga to trip up in any of these two games.
Nope, I agree with you. Nothing there. Let's stick out west quickly through the Mountain West, where Nevada also continues to roll with a win at Colorado State and a win and a revenge win, David, over New Mexico in a dominating fashion, as we expected.
Yeah. So I, again, they are just steamrolling. They're winning. They're winning big at home. They're winning big on the road. They are just pile driving this conference. A little bit of a bubble team here. I know we don't have too much time. Utah State ended up in my field today. When you look at the resume, here it comes here in a second. One of the things that should stick out to you is that in no way does this team belong in the tournament.
Okay.
But the problem is I couldn't find anybody that I liked any better.
Joe, you want to respond to that? Is Utah State, should they be in the bubble talk?
The fact of the matter is, yeah, I'm the one who is promoting Arizona State, but this is why I like Arizona State more. Arizona State has more ugly.
I have them in, too.
Has more ugly than Utah State. But the fact of the matter is, Arizona State – I mean, that – St. Mary's is a – I'm sorry. St. Mary's is a quadrant one. That's a joke when I saw all those Clemson quadrant twos. And
they're at the cusp there, Joby, too.
It's not real.
Yeah.
I recognize it as not real because they have the high quadrant one and the low quadrant one, and this is a low quadrant one.
Honestly, so, I didn't even give them that much credit for that. I really like the wins at Irvine and Fresno State. I thought that was better than anything I could find on anybody that I didn't take, and I did take Arizona State too.
Yeah, I mean, but I just because that was the last bubble team, and they're a contrast. Some really good with some really bad. This has some really bad with almost no good.
We could start rattling. Well, Georgetown, I mean, you showed them earlier.
Well, I got in my notes here that Titel also likes a bubble team in the Mountain West. You want to talk about San Jose State? Is that correct?
If your bubble is big enough to include the Spartans, then yes. We always talk about the good teams. We could talk about Nevada for the whole show, but some quick info about San Jose State. Three wins this year. They're all at home. They beat NAIA Power Life Pacific. They've beaten a pair of wins over Bethune-Cookman and NAU, wait for it, by a combined 7 points. They're this close to being winless. They're probably going to finish 3-27. They might be the only team in the nation to go winless in conference play. But as Rocco L knows, they still not are the worst team in Northern California because of the Pac-12, right?
Exactly. We need to schedule a game.
Yeah.
Are
they eligible for the Stallings?
They might be eligible for the Centenary Award, so we'll be talking about that.
I'm just going to call it right now. They're going to be facing each other in the AC8 when that's unveiled in March.
The only bigger disaster than the Fyre Festival is Chad's management of the AC8 tournament these last couple of years.
Hey, wait a second. Let's move on here. Nevada won game this week there at Wyoming on Saturday. But Rocco, let me go over to you as we turn for the American, where we saw one of the biggest games of the season so far in the American over the weekend when Houston took care of Cincinnati 65-58.
Yeah, it's like another day at the office for the Cougars. They're just playing really rock solid. Again, they've had a little bit of home court here on their profile, but they've gone on the road in conference. They've got a couple of key road wins to prove that they can, play well on the road. I think they'll have a little bit of an overloaded end of the schedule. Well, they'll have a couple more tests to get through. But they're clearly a threat in the tournament. I think the way last year ended is going to stick with this team throughout the end of this journey. Of course, on the long three-point shot by Jordan Poole to break their hearts. And they've got a chip on their shoulder. They play really physical. They attack the glass. I also think Cincinnati is a very physical team, and I was excited to see, who would kind of outweigh each other. And Houston held their own and then some. So, there's a comparison. I don't know if you can pull it up on the right to do a Houston versus Tennessee, but I was looking at this earlier. It's very interesting. They actually are very similar if you add up the Q1, Q2 together, and then you look at their different efficiency ratings. You can make an argument that Houston has as good of a profile as Tennessee.
Well, Tennessee's Q1, Gonzaga, Louisville, we're talking about protected seeds, whereas Houston, we're just talking about.
Yeah, when you actually read team names, it gets a little bit worse there, but I see your argument.
More on a blind resume, I should say.
Yeah. Right.
Thank you, David.
Yeah, Houston, I'm excited that they're good again. They've kind of done it quietly. As highly as they're ranked, they haven't really taken the nation by storm, even sort of the way Buffalo and Nevada have. And I don't know why. This is a really storied program. If you look at their history, as bad as they've been for a long time, up until really Kevin Stallings got – or not Kevin Stallings, but who's the coach there? My God.
Kelvin Sampson.
Thank you. Until Kelvin Sampson got there, I mean, they are important to the history of college basketball. And this was a team that lost on a three-quarters court shot at the buzzer to the national runner-up last year. And, had they won that game, I think they were good enough to go another round or two into it. Is this the year Houston finally explodes back into the national consciousness and not just of the basketball junkie consciousness? Anyway,
it's a good point, and it's going to be really interesting to see how this team performs when we get to the NCAA tournament.
Right.
Salika, how about your Bearcats, not your Bearcats, but your hated Bearcats, I guess I should call them, on the right there. I mean, a bloated record, but there's not much there besides an Ole Miss win, is there?
Well, even that's going to be offset by the loss at East Carolina, but by the same token, Cincinnati – I think with the exception of the game at Central Florida, is probably going to be favored to win the remainder of their games, even their home finale against Houston, which my guess is they'll probably end up pulling that one out. They'll go in, assuming that were to hold form, probably with a, I want to say, 26-5 record going into the conference tournament. So they'll have the bloated record, but my feeling is they probably wind up with a 6 or 7 seed before everything is said and done.
And losing the first round, as
they
always do.
No, losing the second round.
Yeah, right.
That's our second round, as they always do. Tytel, should we be talking about South Florida?
Oh.
Did you even name their coach anybody?
Brian Gregory.
Very good, very good. There's hope for you guys, yes. Only because, this team started 11-2, but they lost to Georgetown, for God's sake, so nothing to get excited about. Then they start off conference play in the American, and they're underwhelming, 2-4. But if you look closer, single-digit losses to Temple and Cincy and Houston, all explainable losses. Since then, they've won 5 in a row. They're 7-4 in conference with 7 games to go. The good news, they do not have to play the Bearcats again. The bad news, their next 4 games, at UCF, home to Temple, at Houston, home to UCF. Good luck.
I think the good news is they don't have to play East Carolina again because they were really playing with fire in that one.
They were, but Alexis Yetten, who's been their star player as freshman, did not play that game. So when you're missing your best player, against East Carolina, it's going to be tough. So I'll
if they win that next four, it will propel them inside the bubble, and it's going to be insufferable because it's just Zach will you won't be.
The upcoming schedule here, we did mention that you know, South Florida, the big trip to UCF on Wednesday, and then hosting Temple. Houston is at UConn on Thursday, and then at Tulane on Sunday.
Just a quick counterpoint to David. Teams that lose at home to Citadel do not make it onto the bubble, all right?
good to know.
The Atlantic 10 and Tytel, you told us – I want to call you out of this a little bit because you told us a couple weeks ago that there was no way in hell that VCU or anybody else was at a bubble team, et cetera, et cetera. You did a bracket Sunday that had both Davidson and VCU in it. Was it a mistake?
I'm not perfect. I mean, like, they're playing well, and as Joby has pointed out time and again, like, it's a weak bubble. And, like, the fact that we're talking about teams like Utah State and Georgetown, for God's sake, like, I don't think they're both going to make it. But as of today, I don't know that I can find 66 better teams than Davidson and VCU.
Right, well, but Davidson turns around on Saturday, yeah. Rocco, and loses to UMass.
Oh, my goodness gracious. Oh. Yeah, the only reason they're in my field still is because they – are tied for first with VCU and they beat them. So I'm giving them the edge, but beyond that, they're not inside the bubble in my book. I think VCU though, you know, they're a very interesting case study kind of on the flip side of NC State because they play, they're still fifth in non-conference strength schedule. If we use the old RPI model, I believe they are top 30.
28. Yep.
Yeah. They're 28. So, if we were looking at last year's resume, they'd probably be an easy 10 or 9 seed working with RPI quadrants instead of net quadrants. And I'm overall impressed because, you know, in the A-10, you have more pressure than a more of a power league to perform against teams that are well below your level. And they keep showing up and making sure they take care of business. And they've done it in impressive fashion. I got to watch a little bit of that St. Bonaventure road win, which I know they're not a good team this year, but going into that building and with a rowdy atmosphere, they went in and took them out of the game immediately. So that shows me that they're at least a somewhat of a quality club.
Chad, put up the RPI, yeah, because I know you could switch it, change the rating to VCU.
I have a VCU up here on the right side. Yeah. On the left there, you're seeing their current.
I don't know. I'd just like to see the
current rating under the RPI. It's not that different. The one thing is the Temple win moves up from a quadrant two to a quadrant one win. But the losses still look kind of the same on a quick glance, at least. So it's not
that Temple. Temple is worthy of quadrant one in all honesty, because I think they're a tournament team. It was on neutral court.
Right, but so it looks a little bit better if we were looking at under last year's model on the right there as opposed to this year's model on the left. But let's take a quick look at the upcoming schedule in the A-10. Very, very quick, VCU, who did get the two wins this past week, they are hosting Richmond, a big rivalry game, and then a tough road test at Dayton actually over the weekend. So they've really got to win both those and probably every other game left of the schedule if they've got to be serious about getting an at-large bid should they not win.
Yeah.
Auto. One last team to very quickly mention, Buffalo still on the top in the top 25, actually fell a little bit in the rankings after struggling, but picking up a win against that. Was it Central Michigan that they struggled against this week? I think it was.
They struggled for about 30.
They not only struggled against Central Michigan, they spotted the Chippewas an 18-point lead midway through the first half before digging themselves out of that hole. But I think the thing we have to pay attention to Buffalo is going to be their schedule this week, where
Friday night, yep,
to an Akron team that was white hot at home against Kent State in the Wagon Wheel, and also a Toledo team that actually won at Bowling Green for the first time this year.
Yeah, really good analysis, John. And another thing, everybody loves this Buffalo team, and I don't want to take anything away from them. They're in the rankings. What got them into the national consciousness was that opening night win against West Virginia. If they were to play that now, everybody would be like, damn, Buffalo really struggled in needing overtime to beat West Virginia.
You might be right. Although that was a healthier West Virginia team, a fuller team than what they've got today, which is no team left whatsoever. But I think on that note, let me go ahead and pull this down and run through each of you for any other final thoughts of the evening. Joby, let me start off with you tonight.
Sure. I often talk about how teams pivot off one team kind of holding up the conference, whether it's the Furman win over Villanova, kind of helping justify the whole SoCon and making Wofford and East Tennessee State and UNC Greensboro more strong. I've mentioned the American before, Houston being the top of the pyramid. We talked about Houston and how Houston's strength actually helps make the case for four American bids this year, I think. But maybe the team that then translates over, and we saw this with Florida State, we saw this with Houston, maybe the most important team for the American is seeing LSU continue their run. Because let's say LSU stumbles and is no longer at the top of the SEC and falls out. They're going to be a tournament team. But let's say they fall to the middle rankings with like four or five SEC losses. All of a sudden, that Houston vaunted win comes away, and then what does Houston have left? Wins over other American teams who justify their very existence on Houston. So, American fans, you are wanting to hold that tiger in Baton Rouge.
All right, good point. Salika.
I'm going to talk about the SEC right here, and that LSU has clearly distanced themselves as the number three option. You look at teams like Mississippi State, Auburn, Alabama. I mean, the Tide are going to have the nice win at home against Kentucky, but if you're a Mississippi State or Auburn fan, I would start to feel a little bit nervous, but because no one has really separated themselves for the pack or getting into the pack, they probably can feel a little safer compared to most recent years, but I wouldn't be resting on my laurels just yet.
Nope, you can't, definitely. Tytel.
So I know we talked about Kansas at length. I want to do a little more specific of a final thought about Bill Self. So first off, the stat. He's won at least 23 games every single year for the past 20 years, going back the Illinois and even the Tulsa era. He enters tonight's game at TCU, which he's currently winning by 2 points in the second half, 18-6 overall. He still has games left against whatever's left at West Virginia and at Oklahoma State. So even if he does lose tonight, I think he's going to easily get the 20 wins. However, five other regular season games are against five teams who might make the NCAA tourney, and he's going to be without an injured Udoka Azubuike and possibly an away for personal reasons LeGerald Vick. Then if they keep sliding, he might be in the 4-5 Big 12 tourney quarterfinal game, perhaps against the same TCU team who's going to need that game more. Then maybe he gets into the tournament as a 5-12 upset special team as the 5 seed. Even if he wins that, maybe he's got a second round game against a 4 seed, perhaps the defending champs, perhaps a 1-loss Nevada team. I think Self can get it done because that's all he's done for the past 2 decades. But this team was 15-2 a month ago, and now they might not win 23 games.
Wow. That's an amazing stat, actually, there of Rocco.
It is, yes. So, yeah, just to follow up on what David started the show with in terms of the reveal over the weekend, I think there might be a few fan bases that were a little disappointed not to see their names called in the top 16. But there is another factor that when we're trying to figure out who the protected and deserved protected seeds are, and we don't have a full season's worth of data, but even when we do, this will be a key stat, and that, of course, is non-conference strength of schedule. And I think that's somewhat hurting teams like Iowa at 289, Texas Tech at 177, and Kansas State at 132. I think they might be in a position where they will need an additional win in order to supplant some of the teams with very strong strength of schedule. So that's just something to keep on your radar as we go through the next month.
So you're saying NC State doesn't have a good shot at a protected seed?
Yes, I am.
Okay. Just making sure. David, let me let you finish things off.
Well, I was going to talk about Bill Self at Kansas, but it's just the incredible run that he's had there. But I'll switch my thoughts over to the coach at Nevada and just how he took over that program. They don't really have any real basketball history. They've been to a couple tournaments. Mark Fox, I think, got them into the top half of the bracket, and then they had a sort of a Cinderella run to the Sweet 16 back in 2004. But he got there. They weren't even really a postseason team. In 15-16, they won the CBI. I think they won 24 games that year, but not at the end of the regular season. Like, it took them the CBI to even break the 20 mark. And then they got to the NCAA tournament the following year, but they were in as automatic qualifiers. They were not inside the bubble they probably wouldn't have gotten in. Then last year in the top half of the bracket in the Sweet 16, and now here they are being projected as a four seed. It's just one of the better, more impressive turnarounds there. And, you know, it's just when you look at it, how can you not be impressed with what George Mason, strength and conditioning coach, Andy Durahan, has done out at Nevada?
He's done a great job, George Mason, coach for Nevada, hasn't he?
Yeah.
On that note, I don't even know what to say other than I do want to thank everyone for joining us. We'll be back with an Under the Radar and a Bracket Rundown podcast later this week. But then on behalf of John Titel, Rocco Miller, check him out at Bracketeer.org, John Stalica, David Griggs, Joby Fortson, I'm Chad Sherwood. Thanks for joining us. We'll talk to you again real soon.